Have you ever wanted a bit more positivity in how we talk about the agency business? Or maybe some fresh ideas for how you and your agency can thrive? If so, you're in the right place. Welcome to the Immortal Life of Agencies. This is the podcast that celebrates the visionaries and changemakers who are actively future-proofing our industry. You'll hear from the leaders who've been there, done that, and are happy to talk about the t-shirt, even if it's a bit grubby. Sounds good, right? In each episode, you can expect short, sharp conversations with some of the biggest, broadest, and deepest thinkers in our industry, and a bunch of practical takeaways that you can apply to your own agency today. So in short, expect untold stories of progress, always optimistic and never dull. Welcome to the show. Today's guest is Ruth Mortimer, the global president of Advertising Week. Now, Ruth is a fabulous advocate of creativity. She's also got a really global view, having worked in creative and advertising and journalism for her whole career. She's seen it all. She knows what's happening in Latin America. She sees what's happening in the States. She's got a great set of contrasts with what's happening here in the UK. So we get right into that. We talk about conditioning culturally. We talk about budget differences. We talk about the political environment. What really drives creativity? Where does it come from? Are we optimistic? Is there hope enough in the industry? It's a fantastic, far-reaching conversation, which takes us straight to where we always like to go, which is optimism. What's the mindset that pervades within our industry? How can we create a sentiment that allows us to do things that we perhaps wouldn't have thought was possible before? And of course, that takes us to where we always have to go these days, into AI. Ruth brings a fabulous perspective on how AI is giving a voice to underrepresented people, bringing a different set of innovation and a different set of ideas into our industry and the commercial impact of those great things. And she also leaves us with some brilliant advice for agency leaders. So dive into the episode and enjoy. Hello to you, Ruth Mortimer. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's a real pleasure to have you on. Now, I'd love to get a little bit of context for everybody listening, first of all. So I've known you a while. I've known some of the things you've done. But those of the people who are listening who are unfamiliar with your history and your context, I think it's going to be really helpful to the things we want to talk about. So if you give us a quick potted history of how did Ruth get to here?
Okay, perfect. Well, currently I'm the global president of Advertising Week. We are a global platform, which is to bring everything together within the advertising and marketing industry. So we do events all around the world. We have events in New York, London, Tokyo, Sydney, Mexico City, Johannesburg. And throughout the year, we do lots of branded content. We've got our own podcast series, everything the advertising industry needs effectively to meet, network, and build their businesses. So that's what I do now. Before that, what you'd say about my history is I've always worked at businesses that are built by content. So before that, I was the managing partner of eConsultancy, which is an amazing product that helps marketers get better at their job and train themselves through research, consultancy, and a great subscription product. Before that, I ran an event called the Festival of Marketing. I was the editor of Marketing Week magazine. I had a career doing also freelance journalism, lots of different places, doing everything from writing about design and creativity, which I think you can tell from my career is really the thing I truly love, right through to identifying talent for Channel 4. And I think potentially I was terrible at that job. So that's why I had to embrace talking about other people's talent instead, because I'm not sure I found I had any myself.
I love it. I love it. Well, I mean, if ever there was a career that was steeped in creativity in all of its forms, it's yours. I suppose at heart, would you say you're a journalist, or have you sort of transcended that? How would you describe yourself?
I think I just love stories in whatever form they come. And actually, I think that translates across jobs, so that if people are prepared to pay me to make my ideas and stories come to life, I love that too. I'm interested in reporting on things. I'm interested in creating things. So I think that's what I'd say is I love to be paid to make stories happen.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, there's something very joyful about anybody that is able to make a career out of the thing that they love. And it sounds like you're doing it. So that's wonderful. Something you said earlier on, just in your introduction, which I think is just a brilliant leaping off point. Just the breadth of the things you've done, but also the breadth of geographies that you've covered as well. So it sounds like you've got like a really global perspective on creativity, which I guess a lot of people don't have such a, you know, a broad view. So maybe you can just unpack that a little bit about what you're seeing across creativity in its broadest sense around the world. What are the differences? What are the trends you're seeing, if you like, in recent times?
I think the global perspective is really interesting because getting to work in so many different geographies, apart from probably constantly making cultural mistakes, I think the real learning for me has been that different geographies are in completely different places when it comes to agencies, creativity, and marketing. I think I would say, for example, in Latin America, creatives, they're really revered in a way that I definitely don't see as much here in Europe. The creatives are really at the top of their game. They're the superstars, the megastars. And there is a genuine belief, I would say, in that market that creativity solves business problems. And that is a genuine belief. And people believe that you should lean into creativity to solve business problems. And honestly, that's not a conversation I'm hearing so much at the moment over here in Europe. I'd say in the US, there's still great kind of respect for the great creative agencies, great creative ideas. You know, the Super Bowl is a cultural moment in the US for its advertising as much as the sport. And I think that tells you something about there is a kind of joy found in the commercial and creativity coming together that, again, I don't feel is so at the forefront here in Europe. I feel this is a much more logical market. And I would say the things I hear talked about much more here is return on investment, keeping costs down, and not so much leaning into that creativity to solve business issues. So I think the global perspective makes you realize how different the industry can be in different places.
I think that's fascinating. Certainly doing what we do at Codefino, we talk a lot about what agencies are putting out into the world, how they see themselves, how they stand out, and so on. And quite often you do hear, you know, the same kinds of rhetoric again and again. Like, we all know this. It's, in a lot of cases, a bit of a sort of sea of sameness, if you like, when you look at agencies. But certainly some of the rhetoric that you're referring to, this idea of solving business problems, is not unfamiliar, certainly. And it's certainly not unfamiliar in the UK market. So if everybody's saying it, perhaps the evidence of doing it or really believing it is greater in places like Latin America and obviously in the States. This reverence, as you say, for creativity. What do you put that down to? Why is it different?
I think partly it comes down to differences in economy and budget. I think the budgets in the US are much greater. The opportunities are much greater than they are necessarily here. So I think you have more of a risk-taking kind of attitude and culture. Whereas I think it's no secret that the UK economy at the moment doesn't feel like there's a lot of risk-taking going on. It doesn't feel like people are saying, you know what, let's go out there and take a risk and really push the boundaries here. It feels more like a kind of retreat. And I think that's reflected in the, you know, economic numbers you see here. So I'd say it's partly about risk. I'd say in Latin America, it's about the growth. So Latin America, I would say, feels like it's growing. You know, it's growing in e-commerce. I think a lot of economies that are developing, you feel you have nothing to lose by finding creative solutions. And I think it's that kind of, we've got nothing to lose and everything to gain attitude that really comes across when I'm working in those regions. Whereas in the UK, I don't feel those are the conversations I'm having as much.
Again, that's so interesting, isn't it? This is almost that sort of creativity is all, I don't want to say it's innate. It sort of implies it can't be learned and nurtured. And of course it can, but I guess we're all the product of our upbringings. We're all the product of our, you know, the conditionings that we've received from all sides, particularly, you know, from our bosses as we've grown up through our careers. So I wonder if there is this sort of, what's the best way to phrase it? Almost a sort of less optimism, perhaps less positivity, less of a risk-taking attitude in the UK. I'm curious to dig into that, sort of where it comes from. Is it just a sort of product of, you know, the economy having been difficult for, you know, a good few years, certainly since COVID? Obviously, there's been a period of good time since, you know, the global crash in 2008. Is this a sort of comfortable upbringing thing? Is this more generational, or is it just a sort of economical kind of consequence of the economy? I suppose I'm searching for a question in here, which I think is why. Why is this happening here, and how big a problem is it?
I think it's a multifaceted issue. So I think it comes from multiple places. And let me be clear, I think the UK is one of the great creative countries. And in fact, that is why I think this is so interesting. Research has shown repeatedly that actually the creative industries are one of the UK's great exports. I think the AA did a great piece of research a number of years ago called Advertising Pays, which I think showed that the UK creative industries are responsible for £1 in every six of GDP. It's bigger than the telecoms industry. It is one of our biggest, sort of most interesting and financially beneficial industries. So why does it not feel it has that level of optimism? I think it's partly economic. I think partly it is not an industry I feel has particular government support. I'd love to see the UK government really leaning into things that we're brilliant at here in the UK. So we are really great at some things genuinely. I think creativity and TV and entertainment, that is one of them. Sciences is actually another one. And I think sometimes those things have been lost. The things that get the focus are around division at the moment. I think division, culture wars, immigration. And so some of our great successes, I just don't see those being talked about. And I think that atmosphere produces, it just removes the hope in a big way. Because actually, I think people need hope. They want to feel that the future is better than it is today and they're on a path. And I think it really is. So I think partly it's the narrative. I think partly that the reaction to Brexit has left a lot of instability, a lot of lack of clarity in this market about what will happen next. And I think new developments like AI have a lot of brands and agencies sort of in a holding pattern of how will this disrupt us? Let's not go too far in this direction because we think AI will disrupt it all. And so I think all those things together make this cauldron of uncertainty and slight lack of hope.
I love that, the cauldron of uncertainty. I'm almost sitting here feeling very British at the moment with our sort of like, oh, well, you know, the sun's out. I better take an umbrella because it will probably rain later. We've got this sort of Eeyore-ish kind of prepare for the worst mentality. But equally, I mean, it seems very likely that we're going to have a Labour government, you know, regardless of your politics. You know, it doesn't feel like 1997. It doesn't feel like a new wave of optimism coming in, you know, after a long government from one side of the fence being replaced by, you know, a very different, more dynamic, more sort of progressive agenda from the other side. So I think the sense when I talk about politics with agency leaders at the moment in the UK is that, yeah, probably won't change a right lot, which kind of suggests that, which I agree with. It also suggests that if there's any sort of sense of stasis, it's probably not politically driven. It's more of a sort of a legacy or a hangover from some of the things that have happened. It suggests perhaps there's less uncertainty in this market because things won't change much. I contrast that obviously with what's happening in the US. The election there, from what I can gather, seems to be on a bit of a knife edge. We don't know which way it's going to go, and it could go in quite dramatically different directions. I suppose, I mean, I'm not an expert. You could suggest that in the States, sort of waiting and seeing how it goes and how the kind of political environment alters after the election, we'd create more stasis there. But that doesn't seem to be the case. So there's probably something quite deep in the US psyche about pulling up your socks and getting on with it and making it happen. And again, I suggest in Latin America, again, there's probably a kind of a sense of personal responsibility and recognizing that maybe I'm generalizing massively and offending probably an entire continent. I apologize. But kind of no one's going to do this for me. I better do it myself. So anything is possible because I'm in charge. So there's a, you know, perhaps a degree more personal responsibility there.
I think the dynamics of every market are very different. And like you say, the politics are very different. I think we have different setups here in Europe than we do in the US in terms of notice periods, job security. All these things make a different environment to people operate in. But I think I feel a bit more like there is an opportunity for a new government to come in to change things. I actually feel less like you have to accept the status. I think to myself, this is where a new government, whoever that happens to be, could embrace this. The advertising industry is an industry which is purely devoted to influencing people, changing people's minds, nudging people in one direction. When you have a whole industry like that sitting there at your disposal, why wouldn't you engage with that? So to me, I feel like My big optimism is no, I hope whoever the new government is thinks actually this is a huge opportunity for us. It's a huge economic opportunity. It's a huge social opportunity to tackle social issues, to tackle some of the change we want to see. And I think that hasn't happened. I mean, I don't know if you remember back in the days of the COI with Mark Lund running that, where this was more so in the days of that Labour government before. And then in
just for everybody else, by the way, this was the Central Office of Information. This was the effectively central government's communications office.
Exactly. And that was an office that it was headed by Mark Lund at the time, who's still very much involved in the advertising industry. But he was a big believer that actually to get public messaging out there, you need to use the industry. And that was such an active sort of part of the advertising industry. I think that kind of approach just worked much better. It's not about the political party who are in power. It's about your approach and thinking, how do we get this industry that's all about persuasion to help fix things and bring back that hope and optimism? How do we make things better together? And I think there's a bit of that missing right now.
So the big question is, how do we bring it back?
But do you know what? I think there's lots of ways to bring it back. I think one thing that's really interesting me at the moment is new approaches. So I've seen bit of a proliferation of agencies who are sort of coming up slightly unusual or different places, which I find very interesting. So one example I could give you is the guys at Pablo. I was talking to Gareth Mercer, who's one of the founders of Pablo. They have a very interesting philosophy, and Gareth said something, and I'm going to steal his words. So if you hear this, Gareth, apologies, but hopefully I did it to you. And he was talking about how one of the things that often happens when people set up independent agencies is they're often trying to fix the problem that they encountered in their sort of big network agencies. And I'd say from speaking to people, that's absolutely true. People work in big agencies, do great work and think, oh, this didn't quite work for me. So let me create an agency that offers something different. Gareth's approach was, having not done that and not worked in those agencies, I just didn't know what the problems were to fix. So I just set up my agency in the way I thought it probably should be done, but I didn't really know. And that has liberated him to create work in a totally different way, because he's not out there trying to, you know, run an agency differently because he didn't know how they were run in the first place. And I think things like that make me smile for a moment and go, yeah, that's genuine creativity. That's genuine creativity and a genuine creative approach coming. So I think things like that make me think, no, there are still people out there creating sort of great new creative businesses that are doing amazing work and they're growing and thriving.
I love that. You've actually hit a pet topic of mine. I think it's fascinating when people that are not steeped in agencies are succeeding in agencies. Off the top of my head, so Peter Reed, chief exec of MSQ, obviously doing great things. You've got Damien Journey at 72 and Sunny in the States. You've got Sarah Hackett, the chief growth officer at Digitas here in the UK. All of these are people who have not, exactly to your point, have not had that traditional agency upbringing. So they have brought fresh eyes to their roles and they have brought a lack of conditioning into those seats that they hold. Now, of course, they've been in roles to some degree, for some of them in for some time. Now, obviously, they know their stuff. They're obviously extremely competent and they learn quickly. But what makes me so excited about what you said and ultimately so optimistic about it is that this is just a mindset thing. To the point about what Gareth Mercer at Pablo was saying to you, it's easy for someone, or certainly easier for someone that hasn't got all of that baggage, you know, around how the industry is supposed to work, in inverted commas, it's easy for them to, they don't know what they don't know, so they just get on with it. Whereas I think for other people who have been conditioned over the course of a career that there is just, you know, this is just how you do it, that's a choice. And to sort of just, you know, portray it as, well, you know, it's just the way it is, that's really a failure of imagination. And that's what we're supposed to be good at. We're supposed to be good at these lateral leaps. We're supposed to be good at being able to say, well, it doesn't have to be like that. You know, we go back to the old Saatchi's, you know, nothing is impossible line. That seems like if it pervaded the industry a little bit more, that sentiment, we'd be in a much stronger position than the, you know, the kind of commercial cul-de-sac that a lot of agencies find themselves in. So I think that's fantastic. I, I suppose my question is whether you agree with that. Is it simply a mindset we get to be able to say to ourselves, you know what, we don't have to be so restricted by convention?
I think I'm definitely not here to kick the agency leaders, the agency markers. I think they're doing what is a really tough job at the moment. I think it is a tough thing to sell ideas and vision and creative thinking when also lots of companies are retreating, spending less, asking for more with less money. So I think, yes, it's partly a mindset thing, but I do think it needs to be a whole industry thing where people go, what matters to us? At Advertising Week Europe last year, we had a great lunch with Richard Curtis, the film writer, director. And one of the great things he did, so he'd come to Advertising Week Europe to ask the industry, hey, could you help me? Because we need to meet on a global scale, the UN's global goals. And he thought, who could help me meet the global goals? And he is that person who has that optimism, who goes, this feels like an industry of people who can really change things and is someone who absolutely believes in creativity. And so he came and said, help me with this job. We can use advertising to change the biggest issues in the world, poverty, you know, finance, health. This is what we're here for. And so I do think a lot of it is about mindset, but I think that mindset has to translate into action. Brands also, marketers cannot say to themselves, I want the most creative, brilliant work in the world and then squeeze agencies so hard that they can't get the best people to do that job. The people don't have the time and the mental space to do that work. So I think it has to be something we all accept and embrace together.
Yes. That makes sense. I remember I sat down and had a drink with Lisa Merrick Lawless at Purpose Disruptors. Was it last year? I think it was last year. Just talking about the opportunity for the advertising community to contribute to the debate around climate. And I guess it's the same sort of mentality that you're talking about here with Richard Curtis. This sense that actually we can and also would benefit from being able to take a really strong position on the great kind of big picture creative challenges of our time. I guess for the most part, the reality is that agencies are running pretty lean. You know, the opportunity to invest money in innovation is challenging. There are also all manner of competing demands on their time, not least from clients, but also from technology. You know, there is a constant arms race to be keeping up with the next shiny new thing, some of which will be a flash in the pan, as is often the case. Others will be transformational for the entire planet, never mind the industry. So you mentioned AI earlier on. We're contractually obliged to talk about AI on every episode of Immortal Life. So I suppose the two conversations meet in and around creativity. So what impact are you seeing from AI on creative work?
I think the impact is, so I would say what I see at the moment is that AI is kind of taking out, I would almost say, the middle of the industry. So when I talk to the people at Microsoft, I've done quite a few talks over the last couple of years with people at Microsoft, people at OpenAI. What they say is AI is not there to replace jobs. What it does is augment people. And I think that's true to some level. So if you look at something like Microsoft's Copilot that plugs into lots of the tools you use already, Copilot can't make me a brilliant presentation designer, and it never will. But what it can do is make me quite a bit better than I really was naturally. And in fact, the way I think about that is it's almost taking skills away from your hands and putting them back in your brain. So I don't know if that makes sense, but what I mean is I'm not a brilliant designer with my hands. I wish I was much better at art, but I quite often have a good vision in my head. What AI can help someone like me do is get the vision in my head closer to reality, even if I don't have the skills in my hands to be able to do it myself, which I think is a really interesting concept. So what does that actually mean? Well, I think it has multiple kind of consequences. So one is I think that everybody gets a little bit better at things they're doing, so that the middle of the market is the place that's challenged. I don't think it challenges a really amazing designer if I'm a little bit better at PowerPoint. you still need a designer to do something proper. So I don't think it challenges the top end. I think where it challenges is that middle kind of segment. And we can see that ourselves. I think at Advertising Week, we are using AI to do a lot of video work. And what we found the difference is if you, one of the things we do is we put our 45-minute sessions on demand video-wise. It's quite hard to get people to watch a 45-minute video. But if you can chop it up and make the main points really appealing to people, some of them will invest the time in watching the full thing and some of them will get what they need from the chopped down version. AI can do that in 10 minutes and produce 15 versions of the same video for different purposes. And then it will give you a viral score as well, which tells you how something is more or less likely to perform online. The ability for our editor to use that is kind of life-changing for him. So it doesn't mean you don't have an editor or producer involved, but what it does mean is you're probably not using the level of kind of middle editors that you would once have been using. So that's where I feel it kind of is disrupting the middle of the market right now. The part that I think is still to come is where AI can make the ideas in your head accessible to people who don't have the skills in their hands. That to me is the future part, where I've got a great idea in my head for an animated movie. I can't draw well enough to create it, but with the power of AI, am I able to generate through prompts? I'm a pretty good writer. Am I able to generate that visual film using AI? Maybe.
Fascinating. I love the kind of practicality that you bring to this question of AI and what it's doing and how it effectively democratizes creativity, but also, I guess, at the same time, premiumizes it, if that's even a word, the genuine conceptual creativity, whether you have the, like you say, the hand skills as you put it to get that out onto a screen or onto a piece of paper or whatever else, doesn't matter so much. If there's a different means of extracting brilliant, lateral, innovative leaps of imagination, whether it be onto, you know, into a TVC or into a short story or into a piece of music or whatever else, that sounds really exciting. And I guess that's almost difficult to imagine how far that could go. What are you most excited about that sort of premiumization, if you like, of genuine creative thinking?
I think I'm excited about all the people you don't know in a similar way to, I think one of the good things that social media has done is opened up voices that you never knew existed and that you're really interested in because you never had access to them before. And I think in the same way, AI can open up the creative industries to new voices. There'll be new people out there who couldn't or wouldn't have created films in the old way or cartoons in the old way or images in the old way, that great ideas in their head that you would have just never encountered before. However, I think there is also still space for the people who can create with their hands, because I think that brings another perspective, because actually it is not quite the same skill. If I'm really good at prompt writing, really good at creating imagery or video through words, that is a different skill from someone who is able to visually create it in their head. And I think there'll be something very interesting there about how does that evolve in future when the people who can create the visuals in their head versus prompt, what does that mean? I don't think I know, but I'm quite interested to find out.
Can I hold you to that? If you had to guess, what do you think might happen?
I think the big challenge will be that middle section of the market where I think that people will accept less creative things a lot cheaper. Because this is particularly in advertising, where you have an industry where more and more advertising is online, it's not in big glossy TV slots. It's actually fairly functional and immediate. I think people will go, do you know what? I can accept something not quite as good that is cheaper and easier to create. I think that middle section will be really challenged. But I think at the upper levels, I don't know what to expect. But I'm so, you know, that's the part I'm like, wow, I'm really excited to see which new voices will come out of this. And I'm glad I don't know, Robin, because if I knew, that would be so boring.
Right? Cassandra complex and all of that. I guess this takes us to a place of diversity, right? If we have different roots and I suppose less friction for different types of voices from different backgrounds coming into the industry. I suppose this draws a very strong parallel between, you know, setting aside the obvious ethical and moral case for diversity, equity, and inclusion. It also paints a very, very strong commercial justification for that as well. So it's not just the right thing to do to bring different types of voices into the industry, but it's mission critical, because if there's a democratization of tools and an ability to make accessible the endless brilliant ideas in the brains of any kind of human, we'd be fools not to bring those into our businesses, right?
Yeah, I'm a huge believer that if you bring more people in, the pie just gets bigger because you discover parts of it you didn't even know existed. And I think there's a few really good examples of this. So first of all, let's just say all the data shows that the more diverse you make your leadership in businesses, the more successful it is. So the data backs that. At Advertising Week, one of the things we always tell people is the more diverse your panel is, the more diverse your talk is, the better it actually performs in terms of attendance and feedback. And when you think about it, it just makes sense because it appeals to more people. I don't go to talks where I think, do you know what, this person just is doesn't have anything to do with me, doesn't have a relevance. Of course I don't. So the more people you manage to make something feel relevant for, the more they're going to get involved, attend, watch, take part. But I think the really exciting thing for businesses is all the businesses out there that we don't even know could exist. And one of the great examples I always think, and forgive me if the listeners feel, my God, I didn't think we were going to go there, is businesses that have sprung up around women and periods that I genuinely don't believe you would have exist unless women were starting to create more businesses. So over the last few years, I don't know how much your listeners know about this, but there's been this massive proliferation of new ways to address the fact that women have periods. So kind of different underwear, which is focused around your period. And I think for my entire lifespan before this, there was really only pads and tampons. And what you saw was all the big brands, they didn't evolve from, they just created a different version of what was already out there. And suddenly you saw all these small businesses, a lot of them all women-owned, started to create different types of products and say, do you know what, maybe pads and tampons aren't the way forward. And as a result, you've seen this massive proliferation of businesses spring up. And obviously, the mainstream businesses are following and developing those things themselves. And that is bleeding out into all areas of the market. Now, there's lingerie manufacturers who are getting involved in this, as well as the big kind of, as well as the big sort of companies that make wellness and toiletry products. And you go, oh, how interesting. You open this up to a group of people who weren't involved, and actually the pie got bigger for everyone. And I think it's the same as when you include Black people, people of color, all these businesses that I can't know about as a white woman, they're suddenly open to you. And so the advantage just increases for everyone.
I think that's such a clear and powerful example of the impact of diversity, especially, again, as a privileged white man. You know, the sense of the world which I have is, to your point a second ago, it's just so different to a vast swathe of humanity. So the fact that, you know, civilization has been driven by men for so long, by definition, there's just this massive deficit of innovation because it only speaks to the sensibilities of half the world. If that is, I can't think of a better way to wrap up the show is on that massive note of sort of excitement about what's to come. The Immortal Life of Agencies is all about optimism. And if we're just starting to tap into this diversity of minds and diversity of pent up innovation, and we're kind of creating the tools to unlock that, then the future is absolutely bright. I'm going to ask one last question, if I may, please, Ruth. And that's just, I suppose, a question I often ask at the end of the show. It's about the practical advice. So you've got this incredible breadth of experience. You're obviously deeply connected and passionate about creativity. But what practical advice would you give to agency leaders?
What practical advice? I think, didn't we say earlier we were creatives, Robin? So I feel the practical is a realm we don't really want to operate in. But if we have to, I think my biggest thing would be say yes, get out there, shout about it. Don't assume I think don't assume that people know the things you're doing. Agencies, I would say, are actually some of the worst marketing vehicles I've ever come across. The people who create the most incredible work for everybody else rarely actually shout enough about what they're doing. They think to themselves, people will know, or let the work speak for itself. Don't let the work speak for itself. Shout, shout, shout. All those things you tell clients to do and you do for clients, start doing it for yourself, because this is an industry filled with the most interesting, smart, funny, creative people on earth. Why wouldn't you be shouting about yourselves? And do you know what? For the next generation, there's lots of great organizations out there that are keen to get the next generation. Let me give a shout out to the School of Marketing, who go and tell kids about marketing and advertising and why it might be something you would want to choose as a career in future. And I think to myself, that would be my biggest piece of advice, is follow the things you tell your clients, shout about what you do, and make the industry you want that you're really proud of.
Wonderful. Ruth, I salute your passion. I salute your advocacy. And I'm just delighted to have this celebration of all things creativity on the show. Thank you for being with us. It's been an education. It's been exciting. And it sure as hell has been optimistic. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening today. Hopefully you've got at least one really useful takeaway. If so, I'd love to hear from you. Connect with me, Robin Bond, on LinkedIn, or drop me an email at robin.bond@codefinery.com. Now, it's podcast lore that I compel you to subscribe to the show, so please do. And if you're happy to share this episode and help us reach a wider audience, thank you. I'll personally buy you a pint. Finally, if you're new to Codefinery, then here's the plug. We combine consulting sprints and executive coaching to help agencies like yours create your very own market of one. That means you can stand out, win more, and command a premium, all while attracting the best talent and really thriving in your role. So if you're curious to learn more, drop us a line by the link in the show notes. Thanks again for listening, and see you next time.